Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here at Getaway Friday, June the 4th. 2021. 6:41, 15 minutes past the hour, and today is National Donut Day. National Donut Day today, which apparently is the first Friday in the month of June every year. National Donut Day today, so we're going to have a lot of fun with that as the morning goes on. So stay tuned. We also are going to be giving away, like we did last week, we have tickets to the Columbus Zoo, tickets to the Wilds, and tickets to Zumbeezy Bay. Now, what we will do is we will do donut trivia throughout the morning this morning, and if you get a question right, we will enter you into the drawing, and then we will draw your name out, and you can pick which prize you would like as the morning goes on. And it's going to be a fun morning here because we've got donuts coming in from everywhere this morning on National Donut Day. And 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, will be in studio with us actually here momentarily. But we're going to kick off the morning this morning because a lot going on in the state of Ohio. Of course, there will be a governor's race next year in 2022. And this week, current Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley and candidate in the Democratic primary for governor made some news with an anti-corruption proposals, and we're so glad to welcome to these microphones this morning the mayor of Dayton, candidate for governor in the primary, Democratic primary for governor, Nan Whaley. Nan, how are you?
Good, Scott. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you on National Donut Day?
Is today National Donut Day?
Today is National Donut Day.
And what is there a great donut place in Marion?
You know, there are a few great donut places in Marion here. Of course, we've got the Dunkin', which people like, and Tim Hortons, but Andrews is our local place, which is just great.
I always like the local place the best. So the next time I stop by Marion, I'll make sure that I stop by Andrews and get a donut. We have Bill's Donut down here in Dayton, and you know, during the pandemic, that you know they had to close for a bit during the shutdown. And when they opened up, Scott, the line was like a block long around through just for people to get their donuts. So happy National Donut Day.
Happy National Donut Day to you. Mayor, anti-corruption proposals, what brought this on?
Well, look, I mean, what we've seen in Columbus has been called by the largest bribery scandal in Ohio history, and by the FBI, that was by the U.S. Attorney, and the FBI a couple weeks ago called it the most corrupt state house in the country. And let me tell you, Scott, that is a low bar that Ohio got under there. And, you know, when you have that and you see absolutely no action coming from the governor, no action coming from the Republican held state house, and why would they? You know, this corrupt system has served them for the past three decades. Something has got to change. We deserve better in Ohio. We deserve a government that's paying attention to the issues in Marion and regular people's lives rather than special interests and donors. And if we don't make some changes in our actions and in the laws, we'll continue to get more of the same, you know, this extreme politics that is really only interested in lining people's pockets. And it does not have to be that way.
Most corrupt in the United States, here in Ohio, most corrupt state house. Why? How do you suspect it got that way?
Well, I think when you have three decades of the same people just revolving around, and they get very comfortable with each other, right? And they like the dark because it helps benefit them. They get special interest funding too. And when nobody's watching, over and over again, it just gets worse and worse. And, you know, we saw this first. This has been going on for almost two decades. You know, in 2006, you know, it started with CoinGate. Then they ratcheted up to ECOT, the Electronic Classrooms of Tomorrow, if you remember that scandal that actually sucked millions of dollars out of our public school system. And now the icing and the cherry on top is the biggest bribery scandal in Ohio's history, the First Energy scandal, which we're paying a corruption tax every single month on your electric bill for a coal plant in Indiana that we're subsidizing, even if you don't get your energy from First Energy.
Mayor Whaley, you have some interesting proposals here I want to run through, but this is the question when it comes to this that I get asked most. The whole householder incident, now he is not the speaker anymore, but he is still in office. Now, it looks as if the Republicans don't have any plan to remove him at this particular point, but why hasn't anybody stepped in, the federal government, the FBI? Why has nothing like that happened in this case for a man who's been charged in a very big scandal?
Look, the federal government did indict Larry Householder, and he is due to his day in court. But it's on the state legislature and on our elected officials to throw him out of office. That's whose responsibility that is. The federal government doesn't do that. And that's what's most shocking about this situation, is they have allowed him to sit there indicted. When corruption has happened across the state, and anywhere corruption happens is terrible, but like in Cincinnati, you know, the Republicans quickly moved, rightly, to get rid of the councilmen that were indicted sitting on Cincinnati City Council. But since they're in the same political party, Mike DeWine is afraid of these guys. He's afraid of Larry Householder, and he's too weak to remove him when he has completely the authority to call on the legislature to do that. He hasn't even called on the legislature to remove him.
Your proposals. One I found very interesting when it comes to nonprofits. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one of the things that, you know, this part of the fourth part, there's four parts to the plan, is closing the dark money loopholes and bringing real transparency to political spending. There was actually a bill introduced. This bill comes from Kathleen Clyde, the former state rep, in like 2015 and 2016, before any of this happened, because it was so obvious that people could put nonprofits can connect can create what they call C4s, and they can donate politically and anonymously. And when they do that, nobody knows where that money is coming from. And actually, that's where most of the money in Ohio politics sits today, is this anonymous donors. We need to close that loophole, and there needs to be disclosure for these dark money groups. That's what these groups are. These dark money groups are the reason why people are losing trust in their government, and they should. We can change this. We can make this have sunshine so they are no longer dark.
Tell us a little more about the anti-corruption proposals.
So it's four parts, Scott. The first part is to create a public accountability commission, and that's to investigate corruption in the state government. You know, one of the most important things we can do is take the power to investigate politicians out of the hands of the same politicians and give it back to the people. So that's the first part. The thing is to invest in ethics. You know, the agencies charged with ethics in Ohio have seen more and more demand, but the funding just simply hasn't kept up. As governor, I'll fully fund these agencies so they can carry out the important work of making sure our government works for the people, not for special interests and donors. You know, DeWine's lack of action here shows that he doesn't think really ethics is important. And I'm going to task my administration to collect penalties owed to taxpayers from corrupt officials. By investing more in ethics, we'll actually see taxpayers saving dollars, not costing them. The third part is making sure ethics is a core part of my administration. It will be my first executive order that I will address ethics in my administration. Each one of my appointees will be required to sign a pledge that upholds them to the highest ethical standards, including a prohibition on lobbying of any issue of which they may have made decisions for 2 years after they leave public office. And restoring the state government's ethical standards starts at the top and requires the governor to lead by example. And then fourth, we've talked about closing the dark money loophole, getting transparency, and making sure that we strengthen the foreign money ban there. So that's the four points. Most of these things can be done, Scott, without any action by the legislature. This is stuff the governor could do right now, and you have my commitment. This will be my target on day one.
When we talk about Governor DeWine, one of the interesting things is, you know, we're still in this pandemic, even though the health orders have been taken up. How do you feel Mike DeWine has handled the pandemic? It seems to be very popular among Democrats, actually more than Republicans in Ohio.
Look, I think that Governor DeWine, when Dr. Acton was the health director, was on the right track. I noticed as soon as Dr. Acton left, the focus was more less on health and more on politics. We saw this when he flip-flopped on the mask mandate. One day he said a mask mandate for everybody at the end of April. The next day he couldn't stand up to his extreme right-wing base, and he pulled the mask mandate. Cities like Dayton had to lead on the mask mandate. We were the first city in Ohio to provide a mask mandate, and other cities followed. And then finally, after Larry Householder was indicted, Mike DeWine put on a statewide mask mandate. This all leads back to the corruption scandal and the extremists in his party. He is too weak to stand up to them. He won't do it. You're going to see that over the next few months, more and more extreme ideas. So that's what's holding us back in this state.
We've spent a lot of time talking about Vax-a-Million, and last time you were on the program, I asked you if you thought it was a good idea. It was kind of interesting this week because Mike DeWine held a press conference after we drew the second round of Vax-a-Million winners on Wednesday, and during Mike DeWine's press conference, the Vax-a-Million winners appeared in the press conference, which a lot of people felt he should not do. What was your take on that?
Look, I didn't watch the press conference, so I can't really comment specifically on that. You know, when it comes to, the lottery, of course, it's a gimmick. You know, I'm for anything that will encourage people to get the vaccine because it's our path to continue to get out of the pandemic. I'm proud to be the co-chair with LeVar Stoney of Richmond, Virginia, on the White House's vaccination to 70%, where we're doing, you know, in our communities, everything possible. For example, in Dayton this weekend, we're setting up our mobile hub to our, you know, Dora, our outdoor refreshment area, so people can have a beer and get a vaccine. You know, that's the work that must be done on the ground, and we're committed to that. But, you know, we have to be thoughtful of the use of taxpayer dollars, and I think that's the rub here with the Vax-a-Million. These are taxpayer dollars being lotteried off. So that's what we have to do, though. For us on the ground is making sure, you know, that we get as many people vaccinated as possible. And that's the work that I'm focused on nonstop.
We have about 3 minutes left here with Mayor Nan Whaley. Mayor, when it comes to Governor DeWine, we talked about corruption in Ohio. Do you feel Governor DeWine is corrupt?
I think Governor DeWine is too weak to stand up to corruption. Look, in any kind of work around this, you know, you have to be strong enough to tell people no, and that you disagree with them, and let the political ramifications be damned in it. And we've seen over and over again that he's just not strong enough to stand up to the extremists in his party and the corrupt elements of his party. They surround him and his government. He calls them good people after they've been raided by the FBI. And I think that, you know, we need leaders that aren't, you know, corruption is everywhere in the state house. You're not called the most corrupt state house in the country lightly by the FBI. And so we need a leader that's strong enough to clean that up. He's certainly not strong enough to do that. I think he's afraid of these guys. And I think that's why in 11 months, Scott, we have not seen one single action by him to say, like, hey, we have a problem with the ethical issues in our state, and I want to do something about it. But again, he wasn't strong enough to stand up to his extreme right when it came to COVID. Not strong enough to stand up to the extreme right when it came to common sense gun legislation that 9 out of 10 Ohioans agree with, and he's not strong enough to stand up to the people that are robbing the piggy bank every day, which are the fellow Republicans in his party.
We have not had a Democratic governor in Ohio for 12 years, and if you get the nomination on the Democratic side, you would be facing most likely an incumbent governor. How do you defeat him?
Look, this isn't about, like, red state or blue state to me in Ohio. I don't look at Ohio that way. I mean, I see Ohio, much like Dayton sees Ohio, a place that people are frustrated with their leadership. They've been ignored, mostly because people are more interested in these special interests. They're interested in getting their pockets lined rather than the issues happening every day in your community and mine. I think that's what this race is about. We need someone who's going to fight for these communities, that understands what's going on, that people are working longer and longer hours, getting paid less and less for those hours, and not making the ends meet. That people that are worried that when they have their kids, that their kids won't, if they choose to live near them, won't be able to find a good enough job to do so, so have to move away or move to Columbus. It doesn't have to be this way. Ohio deserves better. And I believe the people of Ohio believe they deserve better, too.
Mayor Whaley, before we get on out of here, Mary Ellen Withrow has joined us in studio. Would you like to say hello to Mary Ellen?
Yes, I love to talk to Mary Ellen. That's so great she's on.
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi, Mary Ellen. How are you? The Queen of Marion, Ohio. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. And you're doing fine as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, guys, it's a great honor to get to just talk to Mary Ellen for a minute, you know, as the first state elected female in the state of Ohio. She's definitely an idol and a mentor and a rock star to me, so thank you. Good to hear from you, Mary Ellen.
Well, I was very interested in what you had to say.
Thank you, thank you. Well, I hope to earn your support and earn everybody's support in Marion.
Yes, I hope so, too.
Thank you, Mayor Whaley.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye. Mayor Nan Whaley, what a way to start off the morning. The only Democrat in the primary right now, I believe, in Ohio for governor, but that will change as time goes on. And as I said, Mary Ellen Withrow is here for National Donut Day. Mary Ellen, what'd you make of Nan Whaley this morning?
Oh, I thought she did a terrific job in the interview.
Now, these anti-corruption policies, do you think we have the most corrupt state house in the country?
Well, it's pretty corrupt when you have somebody that's been charged with an enormous situation that householder has, and nothing's being done. It's very sad to see that happening, and it makes people think what matters anymore. You know,
we had talked, I believe the same week you were on, Governor Strickland was on, and we talked about Vax-a-Million and how Governor DeWine had to be very careful about how he handled this.
Yeah.
And yesterday, during his press conference, he had the winners on during his press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that was an overstep?
I do. Yeah, I do.
What did you make of that when he Skyped these winners in during a gubernatorial press conference?
Well, he's trying to use it as much as possible for his popularity. I still think it was a weird thing to do. Now, if it's bringing in more people interested in getting the vaccination, that's good. But I just thought it was a strange move, really.
The worry in the beginning, and I know you and Governor Strickland had both expressed this, that was this to get people vaccinated, or was this a $5 million political move? After these, we don't know for sure, but after you bring the winners into your press conference, what does it look like? Is it still to get people vaccinated, or has it turned into a political move on Mike DeWine's part?
Well, it's pretty questionable when he uses it in his press conference.
Were you... You know Mike DeWine a long time.
Yes.
Do you think that this might have been calculated in any way?
Oh, I think so. Everything you do is calculated when you're in office. You think things through, and you think, you know, is this going to be a good situation, or is this going to be a bad situation? You always go through that analysis in office.
I know in the beginning we had talked, you said in the beginning you were skeptical of Vax-a-Million.
Yeah.
Then you got a little better about it.
Yeah.
Now, after 2 weeks of it and what we saw yesterday in that press conference, yeah, what's your opinion of it now?
I just don't think it was worth it to spend $5 million on trying to get yourself reelected in that way.
And you think that's what it was at this point?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Why do you feel incumbents usually don't have this type of trouble, and certainly Republican incumbents in Ohio haven't had this type of trouble? What's going on with Governor DeWine?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Do you echo anything that Governor Whaley said? Not that Governor DeWine was corrupt, but that he was weak on corruption.
Well, when she explained that he could have stopped Householder, he had the power to do it without the legislature, that was a point right there that I thought was very, very important in what has been happening.
You know, as she said, you certainly are a pioneer for women in the state of Ohio, really nationally, first woman on Elgin School Board, and really one of the only women in state politics in your time there. When you look at a Nan Whaley, who right now, it's early, but would be considered a front runner in this race, what do you make of her? Young, in her 40s?
Yes, and she's very capable, very capable.
Would this be somebody who you could really, not that you're endorsing anybody, but would this be somebody you could throw your support behind?
Absolutely, yes.
What makes her a good candidate?
Well, she knows the issues very, very well. She's been speaking out on a lot of issues in the last few years, and she's well known. And that's really important when you run for governor.
When you are a mayor, is that a microcosm of something that you would do as a governor?
Being a mayor first,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's good. I mean, they get there in all different ways, you know. Look at Mike DeWine. He went through practically every office there is before he got to governor. You look at your opportunities, and when you have an opportunity, you go for it.
When we look at this pandemic, I know you've been very favorable of how Mike DeWine has handled it. Where do you think we're headed now?
Well, I think, you know, we're on the way out. I hope we're on the way out because, you know, I went to Kroger's yesterday. I didn't wear a mask for the first time, and that was good.
Yeah. It does change.
Yes.
Do you think there's any long-term change that this has brought in people?
Oh, I think yes. I think we appreciate being able to go to a restaurant and enjoy yourselves and get together with your friends and enjoy yourself. I mean, you think about how much you've missed that for so long.
Do you think it's possible that in this next election cycle of 2022 that the Democrats will have, for lack of a better term, their act in order in Ohio?
Well, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
What has happened the last, well, since 2016?
Oh, you ask me that all the time.
It's been an interesting thing because the party chairs seem to switch.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before.
I know. I don't even know the party chair right now. You know, so does that tell you something?
Has that always been the case when you were dealing in state politics and local?
No, not at all.
You knew things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a different world. You know, our mayor Scott Schertzer, during the last gubernatorial cycle, ended up. I don't think you run for lieutenant governor. That was a whole new thing, where lieutenant governors were chosen before the election. But he, I guess, became the lieutenant governor pairing with one of the candidates. He's still a young guy in his fourth term in mayor here in Marion. Would you like to see him go on to something like this in this next election cycle?
Well, yeah, I think it would be great, but it wasn't the last election. It was the one before.
Oh, 18,
yes,
right. You're right, 18.
Yeah, right.
Do you, Nan Whaley is a mayor. Scott Schertzer's a mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he would make a good candidate for something like this, governor?
Oh, I think he would, yeah.
And he worked for you for a while.
Yes, yes.
What was he like when he worked for you?
Nice guy.
Nice guy. Were you surprised that his political career went on after working with you, or did you know he had that ambition?
Well, I didn't realize he had that ambition, I guess, but I'm thrilled when anybody that had been with me goes on to get elected themselves, I'm always just thrilled about it.
We're going to have a lot of fun this morning with National Donut Day, and Mary Ellen's going to be with us through 11 o'clock this morning. But we'll get to the, we might as well get to the heavy news of the morning early here. And we're having some more issue with the auditor in Marion, and yeah, and I know Mary Ellen stays abreast of what's going on, so I'm going to bring this up to the audience. We had the mayor on again yesterday, and we had Ayers Ratliff on. Now, all of you know about the $1.28 million mispayment last June, a year ago, I guess it's been now, to the state of Ohio that should have gone to the IRS. Nobody knew about that in Marion until February. It caused a whole lot of problems. Money was paid. The question is, should it have been paid? Did the auditor have permission to pay it? A committee was formed. They have subpoena power, and they're investigating that right now. We'll leave that where it is. We learned yesterday, through great reporting by the Marion Star, that on May the 12th, and it's kind of convoluted, but I'm going to try to take people through this. On May the 12th, a person who worked in the auditor's office received an email from a Gmail account from somebody saying they were the mayor, Mayor Schertzer, asking them to go get $2,000 in gift cards for door prizes. This person did that with their own money, who worked in the auditor's office. Then another email came, again saying it was Mayor Schertzer, asking the person to do this again, another $2,000 gift cards for door prizes. This time the person took a credit card from the city of Marion and went down and bought the gift cards, and then took a picture of them and sent them to this person who was not the mayor. Now, based on that, Mary Ellen, this person has since resigned, and their family has paid the city back $2,000. What do you make of that?
Do they know who the person is?
Yes, yes.
Oh, they do.
The person, the title is internal, I believe, an investment auditor.
Really?
In the office, yeah.
Well, first of all, I would think you would check with the mayor and make sure that's correct. Because why would you ask for that?
Well, the mayor's office, and the mayor was on yesterday, is three doors down from the auditor's office.
Right.
Yet nobody ever went down and asked the mayor if he was sending these emails.
Right. And that's where you make your big mistake.
And also, the email, which we do have, had nothing to do with the mayor's name, or that it was coming from the or that it was a Gmail, not even a City of Marion email.
Yeah, right. Pretty bad.
Well, when we look at this whole thing, that it's coming from the same office where we had the whole $1.28 million issue, why, in your opinion, somebody who's dealt with money for a long time, why does this keep happening?
It's because they're not careful enough. They don't know what they're doing. It's very obvious they don't know what they're doing.
I want to ask this because, I these scams are around. These email scams are around. But does it sound even remotely normal that the mayor would email you asking you to go buy gift cards for door prizes?
No, it doesn't. And I tell you, when I was U.S. Treasurer, I would get these scam calls. Can you imagine? As U.S. Treasurer, and they were ridiculous. You know, like somebody needed money. And
Well, wait, when you got one, how did you handle it?
Well, I just hung up. I mean, it was just a ridiculous thing. Yeah.
Well, when we look at this, also another issue that was brought up that we learned yesterday, apparently the city of Marion has a limit that you can only have $5,000 on a city credit card. What we have learned because of this is that the auditor's office has a $10,000 credit card.
Wow. Why is that?
Nobody knows at this point.
I'd check into that one.
Well, there's that, and then there's something else we learned, which was there is something in Marion, I'd never heard of this, called the Yarger Report. And the Yarger Report sets forth what the qualifications are for a position in Marion City government. The person who was hired for this position, who has since resigned, apparently never met the qualifications of the Yarger Report, and the person who is currently in that position, who has taken over when the first person resigned after this email thing, also does not meet the qualifications of the Yarger Report. What do you make of that?
Well, what I had never heard of the Yarger Report. When did that come about? Do you know?
You know, it was, I think it was prior to the 1980s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that Marion City decided that you should have certain qualifications for certain positions.
For Marion City, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I believe it's just Marion City.
Yes, uh-huh. Well, I think that's good to have, you know, require qualifications, but it's kind of bad when they don't follow the rules. You know, you need to follow the rules when you're in government, because that's where you get in trouble if you don't follow the rules.
Well, have you ever in your days here in Marion seen an office? Well, what is strange about this particular case, you know, scams are scams and we get them all the time through emails and so on and so forth, but that this office is under investigation by city council when this happens.
Right, and they should be very, very sensitive to anything.
Well, that's when you've ran an office here in Marion County. Now, would an employee be able to go and get a credit card and go buy things without you knowing at the head of the office?
No, not at all. No. We didn't have a credit card.
if we
did, nobody ever told me.
Well, I think the big question that a lot of people have about this, who don't know about city government or don't know about government at all, is how does something like this happen without the head of the office, which would be the auditor, knowing about it?
Well, he should be on top of things, and he's not.
What, in the end, does this say about that person? This is the city's money.
Yes, right. It's, you know, I'm in the city. You know, I live in Primrose, and I pay city taxes, and it's very upsetting to see things like this happening, and it's been one thing after another for the last, well, ever since he was elected, it's been one thing after another.
Something we learned yesterday by having the mayor on, Mayor Schertzer said that their planned meeting was actually yesterday, and they were going to talk about this, obviously, and Auditor Landon canceled that meeting.
Of course. Of course.
He did have a reason.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Well, you know, it ought to be top priority to meet with the mayor to get things straightened out.
Have you ever heard, and we all hear scuttlebutts, of anybody in city or county government having this kind of a relationship with the mayor of the city?
Well, I tell you, I have not been in city government. I can't answer that, Scott. I was always in county government.
Did the county have issues like that, where people
were...
Yeah,
we went to the commissioner's office if there was a problem. Yes, of course.
But was it a friendly relationship?
Yes, it was friendly. Mm-hmm.
Does this sound like a friendly relationship?
Well, it does. No, probably not. If he doesn't show up for meetings, it's not very friendly.
Well, I just want to get one more thing in on here, because Auditor Landon did release a statement to the Marion Star, and I want to make sure I read his statement to be fair about this. Landon told the Star on Wednesday morning that he feels his office is being singled out for making mistakes. He said this mistake and past mistakes have been addressed within his office, and they've been solved. He also believes council is attempting to legislate and administer how his office operates. They're just not able to oversee the functions of my office in the way that they think they can, Landon said. We obviously had a couple mistakes happen in our office that are unfortunate, and they have been addressed and resolved.
Okay.
Does that seem...
Well, they've been resolved. I don't know how were they resolved.
Well, I think I imagine what he's saying there is that the family has given the money back to the auditor's office for this email scam, and that person has resigned. I think that's probably what he's referring to.
But then there's another 2,000 shortage. How is that resolved?
I think that one's being investigated at this point.
Yeah.
Well, final question on this, and I want to make sure I phrase this right this morning, because when I had Ayers Ratliff on, who's part of that committee yesterday, who's investigating the $1.28 million, he said, he said in very strong words that the auditor should resign. That at this point, this is the city's money, and too many mistakes are being made, and he should go. I asked Mayor Schertzer the same thing. Mayor Schertzer said, it's not his place to say that right now, being the mayor, but that if criminal charges arise, that he would have to revisit that idea. Not that this would ever happen to you, Mary Ellen, but in Auditor Landon's case, with things like this continuing to happen, if you were him, what would you do at this point?
Well, I think he should resign.
You do?
I do, yeah.
Is there any particular reason you feel that way?
Well, number one, you know, paying over $1 million to the wrong place is a terrible thing to have happen. And it just shows that he's not qualified for the job.
What does this say that somebody who is not qualified could be elected?
It says that people did not pay attention when they were voting. They had a good auditor in office, and they voted instead for another person that has ended up to be making all sorts of mistakes, and that's bad, especially in an office that's responsible for their money.
Two final questions on this, and hopefully they're easier questions, or not so heavy questions. When Ayers was on, he talked about checks and balances of government. Mm-hmm. And he said one reason there is no check and balance on this particular office right now is when something is asked of them, it's not answered, or it's answered in different ways. What do you make of that?
Well, they need to respond in a creditable way. I mean, that's so important. You know, what do people think at this point when you respond that way?
And the final question on this, just as far as the money goes, you know how important money is, and you, if nobody else at this particular point in Marion, do you feel safe that this person, Auditor Landon, is handling the city's finances?
No, I don't. No.
And now we'll move on to happier days this morning. Well, Mary Ellen, you know, and I was telling somebody this the other day, and it's absolutely true, because we only got about 8 minutes, so we'll just talk about this. I was saying the other day, because somebody asked me, they said, well, how did you become friends with Mary Ellen? And I said, well, in the beginning, I don't know that it was a friendship, but when I called your office for what, because I was a reporter, just, you know, doing what reporters do, bother people, I guess. If I called your office, when you were in Washington, if a secretary answered, you always called me back. Not a secretary. Mm-hmm. This is days before email. You called me back, and I don't ever remember, and some of the things were not the greatest, you know, because people accused you of things that probably were not true, but you never said no comment. You always gave an answer, and I always appreciated that.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like to talk to reporters that I liked, and I always liked you, Scott, because of your the way you interviewed. It was always above board.
Well, I appreciate. Well, you know what? It's a weird world now because even local politicians will say no comment.
And is that right?
Yeah, and I said, boy, that didn't happen. Yeah. Years ago.
Yeah.
But no, you were always, you know, and it was usually fairly quickly that you would return the phone call. And I thought that, because I know you were busy, I thought, boy, that's because you want to get the news out to your audience.
Yes,
And when you get it from, so to speak, the horse's mouth, who's being accused, or a lot of times it was just, are you coming to Marion? I want to confirm that.
Yeah.
It was always great.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Saw your daughter yesterday in the grocery store.
Oh, did you?
I did. Her and her husband, Mr. Rizzo.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they, you at one point, didn't you say she had aspirations to run for government?
Yes, in 2016, she said she wanted to run for county commissioner. I said, oh, you don't want to do that. I said, think about something else.
do you think she still might do something like that?
I don't know. She was all fired up because Hillary lost, and she was ready to go for whatever.
Did any of your kids or grandkids ever express interest in mom or grandma's business?
Oh, they always ask me about things, yes. You know, when I would travel as U.S. treasurer, I would always send postcards back to all my grandchildren just to let them know that where I was and that I thought about them. Yeah.
It's, people don't send letters anymore. I think this is sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always like to get a letter. I still get a lot of letters from people, and I really appreciate it.
There is a great article about your museum in the newsletter sent out by the Treasury.
Yes.
And it's tremendous because you have established this museum that's currently at Primrose, but will be making the move to the Historical Society sometime in the fall. Are you excited about this?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. I think we're still waiting to finish up our oral history because that was cut short with the pandemonium. And I know it's going to be a job to move everything, but I'm sort of getting prepared for it. I want to have one last showing of everything there for the Primrose people, because there's a lot of new people there that haven't seen the museum, and they want to see it, and I want to do that before I leave.
I know that when you first came back from Bethesda to Marion, you told me that you had tons of pictures and boxes. Have you ever made your way through all that stuff?
I'm still working on it.
Still working.
You know, I still find something every once in a while that needs to go in my museum. In fact, I found something yesterday that I didn't know I had. It was the samples of the money, as we were introducing the new money in, I think it was in 96, 95 or 96, I had... we would show people the samples as we were promoting it. And I've got some of those samples that I didn't know I had.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's tremendous. Well, the Buckeye Donuts have arrived. So next hour, we're going to get into the Buckeye Donuts here. We've got 2 minutes left in this hour. You know, Mary Ellen, I did want to ask you this. Somebody asked me this the other day. This is the most trivial question in the world. But somebody said there used to be billboards of you in town with glasses on.
Right.
Big glasses.
Yes.
And they said, you don't wear glasses anymore.
No.
And they said, did you have the eye surgery, or do you wear contacts now, or?
Well, I wore contacts for a long time, and then I've had my lenses operated on, and he put the lenses in. One eye is for distance, and the other eye is for reading.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't have to wear glasses.
Now, after all those years of wearing glasses, what was that like not to have to do it anymore?
Well, I had contacts for a long time. And that was the way my contacts were. They were, one eye was for distance and one for reading. So I was well prepared for it. And Dr. Riego did the operation, and I said he did a fine job because he got it just right.
How was the surgery? Was it simple?
Nothing
at all.
It's a nothing surgery, yeah.
You know, I remember you telling me, and I think it was right after the end of your reign as U.S. Treasurer, that you really had a bad case of pneumonia.
Yes, I was down below 100. I was 90-some pounds. I looked like death warmed over.
Did you just catch it, or was it a...
Well, I probably was overworking myself at something, and it happened, and we didn't know what it was for a while, and my husband was so upset because he said he didn't realize I had pneumonia, you know.
Mary Ellen Withrow is the guest this morning. We're going to have a lot of fun. It is National Donut Day. The famed Buckeye Donuts are here. I don't think Mary Ellen has ever had one. I've never had one, so this is going to be interesting. We'll try them on the other side of the break here, and Terry Klein is here. He's the one who went down to Columbus this morning and picked up the donuts. So we'll be back in about 10 minutes. Don't you dare go anywhere.
How many games are we going to play in this series? I want to say 6 games. We're going to take it in 6.
4-6. So what do you think will happen when the Indians go to Wrigley? Because you know that city also is waiting for a World Series.
Yes, they is, you know, but I believe in the city. I believe in the tribe. The president is taking 300 of the employees over to Wrigley.